Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We had a, I got to read this spot. Sorry, the show's very popular, a lot of commercials. Casper's 4th of July sale is here. Bed white and blue, 30% off bundles, mattresses, and more. Go to casper.com/promo. So we were talking, we're gonna revisit our greatest Robins ever, Batman and Robin, and we did it earlier today. There have been some players. Now, you don't think of the late Kobe Bryant as a Robin. He's a Batman. But during the Shaq Kobe years, for about 5 years, the young Kobe was a Robin in one of the NBA's greatest dynasties. An argument to be made, that's the second greatest team that's ever played in the NBA. The greatest team I've ever seen was Jordan's Bulls. And then I think there's three or four teams that can argue it. Durant, Steph's Warriors, although I think they were too finesse, they'd get pushed around. I think the Kareem, Magic team probably has the best argument. There would be no answer for Kareem. And Magic in his peak, in his 26-27, was not that far away from Michael Jordan. Magic was unbelievable. Give you 40 points, 20 assists. And then I think there's the Shaq-Kobe team, which you, it's the only time in my life you have the two best finishers in the world on the same team. And that's why they sort of, you know, that's why they struggled. They were both the best finishers. One perimeter, one interior. So the Lakers have, you know, two of the four best teams ever. Warriors have one, and then there's the Jordan team. And so Pippen has written a book. He's upset with Jordan because Jordan did the documentary, and it, you know, it made Michael look great, which he was, but Scottie Pippen's written a book. And so we go back. We'll do it before the end of the show again. And where does Scottie rank in the greatest Robins of all time? Not as high as you actually think. And I do have sympathy for Scottie. I think his book's a little bit of an axe to grind. But I do have sympathy for pro athletes when you were the best high schooler in your state and the best AAU guy in your team, and you go to college and you're an All-American, and then you're asked to be kind of like, you know, subservient or a number two or a number three. It's hard. And for a lot of these NBA guys, I think it's really hard, which is why when you put these great players together, they're like rock bands. It burns hot for about 3 years, and then they're like, I want to be the guy again. So that is part, that's a component to that super team stuff. Jim Jackson, Fox Sports NBA analyst, joining us now live. I mean, listen, Scottie was great. I mean, there's no denying that. I do feel, though, Joey and I talked about this earlier, Jim. I've always felt Scottie has been fairly represented as a great two. When he was given the role to be one, he didn't emotionally like it that much. He's never been a great shooter. He was a great athlete. I thought he unraveled a little bit the longer you wanted him to be a one, because I think being a one is hard. The big interview, the media crap, the coach is going to use you as an example. So I feel that Scottie has been fairly represented. I think we all know what he is. Do you think he's been fairly represented or dismissed and marginalized a little bit through the years?
Well, it's a tougher question to answer. And this is what I would say. Being a number one is difficult. I mean, unless you've been in that situation from high school, if you went to college or not, and then in the pros, to understand what it means to carry a franchise, what that burden is like every day, whether you feel like playing or not, whether you're injured, but you got to play through it. That's something you got to carry game after game, year after year. And a lot of players who have limited success, let's say, as being a number two or number three, and they're playing well, but the pressure is not on them to perform, they think that they can carry that load all the time. And a lot of times it doesn't happen. That's not to say that it doesn't. In Scottie's situation, you got to keep in mind that playing with Michael Jordan was a burden in itself, because you're never going to get the full credit.
Yeah.
Because you're playing with Michael Jordan. I mean, and that's the thing about that aspect of it. And I tell people this all the time, is that the challenges in professional sports is that everybody wants to be in that limelight, but sometimes it's cool being Robin. I mean, Robin has done pretty good for himself, I think, throughout the years. in the history, because we're still talking. As we talk about Batman, we always talk about Robin.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think it's pretty cool to be Robin in some aspect.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin McHale's a classic example. John Stockton's a classic example, mm-hmm. where there's nothing wrong with it. There, James Worthy had a heck of a career, made a lot of money, and he's living a great life.
Well, I say this, though. But here's the defense of Scotty. We always talk about the 1 year, and the Bulls actually played extremely well that year. Scotty had a small snippet of being a number one. So he didn't have the full breadth to grow or to fail at that number one, because Jordan came back the next year. Maybe the narrative is different if Jordan stayed retired. Scotty had multiple years to be number one, to go through those growing pains of what it's like to succeed at number one, but also fail. We didn't see that. So we're judging it based on that one opportunity that he had, which was a success in some aspects of, in regards to the record. And Chicago, I think that year, got to the Eastern Conference Finals against New York. Now, he did have the flaw when he didn't want to go back in the game. But isn't that a part of learning how to be a number one?
Yeah.
And we didn't see the full breadth of a Scottie Pippen year two, year three, year four, on what he would actually be like to carry a franchise multiple years.
You know, it's interesting. We view Pippen as a great all-time number two, and yet we look at Paul George, who's a better offensive player than Scotty. He's a better shooter than Scotty. He really is. Mm-hmm. And they're both good defensively. Scotty probably better, but they're both great defensively. But we look at Scotty, who really wasn't built for the last shot, but was a great player, as one of the great twos ever. And then we look at Paul George as, he's kind of disappointing. And I think he's a better offensive player than Pippen, and pretty darn close defensively.
Right.
I said earlier to Joy, is Paul George a one? He's just a lower end one. That he's really a gift. He's the closest thing in the league to Kawhi Leonard. A 6'7" guy defends, can shoot, can score, can make a bucket. How do you view Paul George?
Oh, I'm kind of biased because I cover him. But I've always thought Paul was an outstanding number two. And the reason why I say that is because he was in Indy. Now, keep in mind, we haven't seen Paul, kind of with a dominant number one. I guess you could say Russell Westbrook, but we know kind of how that went. So with Scotty, we saw a number one, and we can judge where Scotty was at in that. With Paul, when he was in Indiana, he was considered the number one, but he couldn't get over the hump. Now, a lot of that had to do with Miami at the time, okay, and LeBron James. A lot of people didn't win championships because of Michael Jordan in the Eastern Conference, okay, and also Western Conference. So, but I think Paul's narrative, it's a difference because I think how he left Indiana and went to OKC, then came to the Clippers. When people have something to nitpick at you about and some things didn't go well in some playoff series, they're always going to carry that with Paul. I don't care what he does. He's had an outstanding playoff run up until he missed those two free throws. So when he missed those two free throws, it's, oh, here he is. It's Paul, Pandemic P again. Or when he may have a bad game, it's, oh, Paul George is back to himself. That's the narrative that people are going to carry with Paul George, unless he can get this Clippers team past the Suns and on to the finals without Kawhi Leonard. But I still think in that, Colin, people are still going to hang on to the fact of what happened with Paul in the past. Some players just have that. Magic Johnson got Tragic Johnson for a reason, okay? Because he dribbled the clock out against Boston in game two in 1984. Then he came back in game four and turned the ball over. But guess what? He has five championships. People love Magic Johnson. The smile is there. So they don't talk about that as much because the narrative on Magic is totally different, unlike the narrative we see about a Paul George who hasn't basically won yet.
By the way, the Suns looked tight last night, and outside of Jay Crowder, it was the biggest game for every member. It was the biggest game for Monty, the biggest game for Chris Paul, the biggest game for Booker. Outside of Jay Crowder, who's been in the finals, it was the biggest game for everybody in Phoenix, and I thought they were tight. Do you think they're tight in Game 6? Do you think it's going to be harder to close than take a series lead?
Well, it's hard. It's always harder to close, even if you're the better team, because you got to match the energy of that team that's about to go fishing. You know, about to go to Cancun or go to Tulum. Tulum is more popular than Cancun right now, by the way. You know what I mean? So, but here's the thing. Let's give Ty Lue some credit, though. Phoenix had a game plan on what they wanted to do offensively at the beginning of the game. So what did Ty Lue do? He came out and he had to go small because Zubac is not there. So he played zone. The zone defense threw the Phoenix offense off. LA was able to make some shots early, which then allowed them to stay in their zone a lot longer. That changed the whole narrative and pace of play and everything about the game in favor of the Clippers. Now, the Phoenix Suns made their run, but Paul George, Reggie Jackson, Marcus Morris Sr., they hit some big shots. So were they tight? Yeah, probably. Is it extremely difficult to close out a series? Yes. And they were at home, so the expectation was you're at home and now you should win this game. I think we'll see a looser team Phoenix when they're on the road in L.A. and maybe a little more tightness from the Clippers because those roles are a little reversed.
By the way, going back to that Pippen book, he calls Michael Jordan selfish. And to that I would say, I mean, to be a pro athlete,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he was, but it's like,
yeah.
I mean, even in your career, Jim, to become an NBA player, a lot of NBA guys come from small towns. At some point, you're identified as a great talent, 14, 13, 12. And at that point, people move around you and kind of groove you often for a path because you're seen as an elite talent. I said it intellectually. It's Stanford. Elon Musk is there. And people are like, oh, he's smarter than even Stanford people. And all of a sudden, you start getting a support group that says, this guy is completely different. And so I guess my point is, Michael was selfish, but people identified like his first year at Carolina when he walked on. Oh, my God, he's almost as good as James Worthy. He was a college All-American. He's 18. Mm-hmm. So I give Michael a pass for selfish. Do you?
Oh, I do, because that was his DNA. And you knew what you were dealing with when you were dealing with Michael Jordan. Selfish from the perspective that he wanted to win at all costs, and you needed to play up to my level, a lot like Kobe. Okay, LeBron is selfish in some aspects, but he's more unselfish, team-oriented. So a lot of that selfishness gets covered up because of that, because he's such a great teammate, because he's so inclusive. But LeBron has his own selfish tendencies. And to be great, you got to have it. Colin, your show, when you left ESPN to come to Fox, you have probably more creative control, which you wanted.
Yeah.
That's it, selfishness from some aspect,
because
you want the show to be the best that it can be. You're open to listening to ideas and having input, but at the end of the day, it's your name on the show. And you want to make sure that the product is consistent, concise every time. And it's no different when you're an athlete. You want to ensure that every time you're on the court, on the field, on the diamond, whatever it may be, on the ice, that you have control of your narrative and trying to win the basketball game. But it's that thin line, Colin, that we always have of not allowing that selfishness to take away from, especially in a team game, not an individual game, take away from the overall goal, which is to win and win big.
I like when you include me and Michael Jordan in the same argument.
You both smoke cigars, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess. I guess we have that in common. Good seeing you, Jim Jackson, Fox Sports.
All right, brother.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Joy Taylor with the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
Well, that Suns team will have a chance to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals in Game 6 on Wednesday night. And Coach Monty Williams is expecting a lot more out of his team in their second chance to close the series out.
The desperation has to be there. That's the deal. You know, just because you have a lead in the series doesn't mean you can show up and they're going to give it to you. You know, we have to understand that, and I think we do now. We will be better when we show up the next time we play. Getting your butt kicked like that should turn it on.
Yeah, Clippers were very good early, very, very good early. And to that point is when you're desperate and you play with that intensity, Phoenix did not match their intensity for about 6 minutes.
Yeah, that's what Jim just said. Like it's actually harder to close out because if your team is playing with complete desperation, you're playing for your playoff life, you're naturally going to have a little more edge and focus than if you know, it's human nature. You know, you got a little cushion. Like, we can play our best game, or we can kind of, especially if you're a team that hasn't been there before, you haven't experienced this level of intensity before, and especially coming in your direction. These are young guys. So, yes, would it be better to just close out the Clippers and be done with it and not risk possibly losing the series if you fumble a few more times? Of course, but that's a veteran thing to go, we're going to go in here and... I think Giannis said it earlier, we're not going to play with our food. I think he was referring to the Heat.
Yeah.
But yes, like you can't let good teams hang around. This is what will happen. Fox Bet has the Suns favored by one in game six. So Suns are favored by one. Expect them to play with a lot more intensity, but
that will be the best NBA game of the year.
Yeah.
That will be the most intense NBA game of the year.
Yeah. So Tim Tebow is facing an uphill battle trying to make the NFL as a tight end. Oh. Eric Mangini came on our show yesterday and gave his thoughts on Tebow's chance on making the final roster.
And this looks like one of those situations where he had a guy that he cared about, he liked a lot, and he wanted to give him an opportunity. But as he comes in, he looks at him and realizes not just age, but transitioning to a different position and the other skill guys that he has available, it's just not going to work. Maybe he just wants the presence in the locker room. And again, that becomes like a practice squad type role, coach in the locker room type thing. But yeah, it's too late to make this transition, and there's just not enough there to make it work.
Well, he's not athletic enough to be like a receiving tight end like you can depend on. So he has to be a blocking tight end, which he's physically big enough. But if you can leave the NFL for 8 years as a former quarterback and come in and succeed as a blocking tight end, then, you know, Tebow's a Hall of Famer, because blocking tight ends is just grunt work, and most of them are Gronk is the only one that blocked as well as he caught. It just doesn't happen. You're usually one or the other.
You know, I'm curious to have a real authentic conversation with some of the top tight ends in the league.
Oh, they roll
how
their
eyes. They really truly feel about this even being a story. Because, I mean, listen, we're in an egotistical business as well. People come up all the time giving you their hot takes on sports. People ask me all the time if I even like sports, and like swear they could do my job every day of the week, right? And it's a little insulting, because it's like, well, I only work for this my whole adult life. Like, I've only put in hours interning and producing and working weekends and freelancing. Like, it's only like been my passion for the last 15 years. But sure, like, I mean, you could walk in and do my job. I feel like it's probably a little insulting to some of these guys who are like, do you know how hard it is to do this? Like, I worked for this.
Yeah, I think a great tight end looks at Tebow like I look at bloggers. We can be in the same room, just bow when I walk in. Is that?
I do not feel that way. But no, it's not so much that. It's not so much other people who are in the business. It's like somebody who just thinks they could just walk in and do what you do. It does feel like I wonder how they truly feel about it, because it's like you're getting an opportunity that you probably don't deserve. Now, to your point, if you can go in and do it,
all right,
we're all wrong. Like, you get the credit for it, but I wonder if we got some truth serum, how it would really go.
Well, I mean, it's scootersports.com. Yeah, I know he thinks he's me, but it's just, I'm sorry. I'm Travis Kelce, and you're scootersports.com.
I can't.
Am I being obnoxious enough?
That's it.
All right, Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Sometimes I have too much fun just being obnoxious.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Bucks Hawks, your Discover card key matchup. All the cash back you earn, credit card end of your first year, Discover matches it automatically. To go to discover.com/yes. By the way, an egregious mistake by me. I called Robin Quivers Howard Stern's. I called Robin Givens. No, Robin Quivers, Robin Givens,
yes.
The actress. So the greatest Robin of all time is Robin Quivers.
Yes.
Howard Stern's partner, who's had a great career, the ultimate number two that elevates the one, star on her own behalf, an egregious slight by me. So we were talking about the number twos, and Joy and I were talking. Just because you're a Robin, you don't always have to be one. Like, the greatest Robin of all time, meaning the greatest number two, is Kobe Bryant. So during the Shaq Kobe dynasty, Kobe was the number two. It was young Kobe. So he's the greatest Robin ever for a brief time. Last 10, 12 years, he was a Batman. But for those, that dynasty, because Gasol and Kobe was not a dynasty. They were just really good. Shaq Kobe felt like a dynasty. The second best is Jerry Rice, who's the best receiver ever, 13-time Pro Bowler, but it was Montana's team. So Jerry Rice is the second best Robin of all time. Mark Messier, a 15-time hockey all-star and the only player ever in hockey history to captain multiple teams to a Stanley Cup championship, is the third best Robin of all time. Went to New York, again, like Kobe, segued out, pivoted out of Robin to Batman, and was still great. Number four, we said, is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. The Showtime Lakers are viewed as Magic's teams. Kareem's the leading scorer in NBA history and a 19-time All-Star, the most in the history of the world. Bill Belichick's number five. I know it's strange, but we now feel Brady, who got a Super Bowl first year without Belichick, is greater than Belichick, who got fired in Cleveland and couldn't win in New England before Brady. Number six would be Dwayne Wade. Now, he's been the Batman on many Miami teams, but on their best teams with Shaq and LeBron, he then moved smartly to the number two chair. Number seven is Lou Gehrig. Did not see him play, but he's the first player in the history of baseball to have his number for a retired by a team. First player ever. So that's something. And he was an MVP at the same time he played with Babe Ruth. Number eight, John Stockton, top five point guard of all time. But Karl Malone was the finisher. He was the bigger, stronger finisher. He was the go-to scorer. Number nine, Gronk. He and Brady have hooked up for more postseason touchdowns than any combination ever. Also one of the great blocking tight ends. And number 10, Scottie Pippen. And I think that feels, that's the best Robin list ever.
And we wouldn't be talking about this if Scottie wasn't.
Scottie has a book out.
Saying what he's saying.
And Scottie was very critical of Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson. And I don't think everything he said is wrong on Michael. Michael could be selfish, but Joy and I have said, when you're the best blank at something in the world, you're going to do what you want in your clock.
Yeah, I mean, certain things that would be a criticism for someone who is not as talented and not a number one aren't really a criticism. I don't know how you become the greatest of all time at anything without being selfish.
Yeah, Peyton Manning probably, Russell Wilson probably have had to be selfish a few times. That's how you... You know, I tell you, Russell had to say, I'm going to play other teams if you don't get me what I want. It's probably selfish, but he got what he wanted.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to, you know, scratch a little and make people uncomfortable. And that's what Russell did. And Peyton did it a few times, too. Do you suffer from lead foot? Goosebumps appear for no reason. Stop living with uninspired performance and handling. Go to MBUSA.com/AMG. Sedans, coupes. Everything. Mercedes AMG. We'll see you tomorrow. Great show. Wednesday. See you then.